today and then eventually rolled into the what would be the deed omnibus bill that will be coming through our committee because it has the tourism budget in it. So that one would be laid over. My bill actually, and wonderful opportunity that I would have to go see Representative Davids and Chair Lincheski in the Tax Committee, my bill would need to be passed out of this committee and then sent off to taxes because of the dedication of the revenue. But what I'm contemplating is we'll hear Representative Ward's bill, and then I will share my bill, then we'll take the testimony, once the testimony is complete, we'll take questions. We'll lay over Representative Ward's bill for possible inclusion. Then we'll formally take up my bill when I'm sitting out there with Representative Ward and hopefully pass that bill off to the Tax Committee for some further discussion. And then we'll come back with what would be House File 791, which is Representative Hortman's annuity regulation bill. Before we do that, we've got a couple sets of minutes. Representative Halverson will move the February 19th minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Seeing none, that carries. And we've also got a second set of minutes, I believe, for the February 25th bill. Representative Anderson will move those minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries. With that, Representative Ward, I will move House File 711 for possible inclusion in the deed omnibus bill. Representative Ward, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I think it's the first time I've been in front of Commerce, but I hope not the last time, Mr. Chair. Matter of fact, I know I'll be here again. So, Mr. Chair, members, thank you. It's our honor and pleasure to be here this afternoon with you on a very, very important bill for the state of Minnesota and for our tourism industry in the state of Minnesota. This bill, House File 711, appropriates $16,225,000 in fiscal year 2014 and then another $16,225,000 in fiscal year 2015, 14 and 15 each, members. And so let me just, I have with me two testifiers today that are going to also testify on this bill to give you the importance of marketing tourism in the state of Minnesota and why we should do this, why this is important. So, members, let me just share with you some information about tourism in the state of Minnesota, and in particular, my district, and for sure, is very, very engaged and important. Tourism industry is very important to us. Tourism in the state of Minnesota, members, generates it's an $11.9 billion industry, and it generates $32 million a day. Tourism supports 250,000 former part-time jobs in the state of Minnesota, provides $4.1 billion in wages. Tourism generates nearly $769 million in sales tax revenue, which is 17% of the Minnesota sales tax revenues. Tourism and travel creates jobs and generates sales virtually in every corner in the state of Minnesota. Our travel and tourism has a positive impact, supporting a wide variety of Main Street businesses across the state of Minnesota. There are a few ways government generates revenue and jobs, members. Tourism does both. Tourism does both. So, tourism is fueled by promotion, however, members, Mr. Chair. And Minnesota's investment in tourism marketing has fallen currently to our 1990 levels. We are funding tourism marketing we rank 30th in the country, 30th in the country. Minnesota is being outspent in tourism by our competitors, regional competitors like Michigan, Wisconsin, South Dakota, Illinois, Montana. They all outspend us in tourism marketing dollars. Destination marketing is an investment, members. It is an investment. You know, the world's best brands, they didn't just create products and expect the world that the path would be beaten to their doors. They understood the critical need to market their products and to create consumer demand. This is U.S. Travel commissioned a comprehensive analysis of recent promotional campaigns by the state of Michigan, and it was called the Pure Michigan Initiative. And here's what they found, members. The study provides conclusive evidence that marketing programs drive greater visitation, generate new tax dollars, and create jobs. I'll say that again. And create jobs for state and local communities.
What was that?
Destination marketing represents an investment. It does not compete with entitlement programs, but helps pay for them, putting cash into public coffers, creating jobs, and enhancing lifestyles, both for the tourists and the residents. The Pure Michigan campaign, launched in 2009-2010, had a media budget of about $10 million. What happened is it increased out-of-state leisure spending by 21% and in-state spending by 6%. 10,000 additional tourism jobs were created. State tourism revenue increased by $114 million, up 13%. Because of this success, Michigan increased their annual tourism budget to $25 million for the next year and established a sustainable source for tourism marketing for years to come and into their future. Members, we're losing our ability to retain not only outstate tourism dollars, but our own Minnesota residential tourism dollars. Tourism touches everyone. It has direct and indirect impacts. It impacts the state of Minnesota, business owners, the employee, the tourists, the resort owners, the indirect businesses that benefit from tourism. Members, we want to increase jobs and sales tax revenue. And finally, I'll just conclude, members, by saying the impact of increased marketing does the following. It increases drive demand to make Minnesota a priority destination. It will expand our marketing into key areas, market areas outside of our five-state area, like Chicago, Kansas City, etc. It'll deepen our marketing in current drive markets, including Des Moines, Milwaukee, Madison, and Winnipeg. It will expand business, expand private partnerships, and increase private investment. It will expand resources to key international markets. It will expand into niche markets. We're developing the brand now, members. Explore Minnesota Tourism has led the path toward a Minnesota brand, engaging agencies and private industry. The brand will be new, sort of like Pure Michigan, but we don't want to be like Michigan. It is investment, members, that will pay off in increased revenue for the state of Minnesota and increased jobs for the citizens of the state of Minnesota. Members, I would like to introduce Lisa Paxton is going next from the Brainerd Lakes Chamber of Commerce. And then she will give her testimony, Mr. Chair, and then we'll get to the... She will introduce our next testifier after that.
Thank you, Representative Ward. Ms. Paxton, welcome to the Commerce Committee.
Well, thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to be here and talk about one of my favorite topics, which is tourism. The Brainerd Lakes area is driven by tourism, and I have the pleasure of serving on the Governor's Explore Minnesota Tourism Council and have served on there for more than 8 years. So I am a part of a very dedicated group of volunteers who dedicate their time to help guide the marketing and promotion for Explore Minnesota Tourism. We have struggled with our position and our competitiveness as a state trying to compete with our neighbors. We see the potential for economic benefit, yet we are hamstrung by a limited budget. Minnesota is known for good-looking people, right? We all can agree with that. And above average children? Not so much our tourism marketing budget. It's below average. Ranking 30th in the United States in terms of resources to market, the state of Minnesota ranks us very low in our competitiveness, and we have an amazing product to promote. I'm proud to be part of a group we are calling the Minnesota Tourism Growth Coalition. We created that group to coordinate an awareness campaign about the importance of tourism. And the coalition has support from more than 100 organizations and private businesses. In your committee packets, we have put a couple of resource documents for your review, and I see some of you have those pulled out. We've got this awesome logo that mirrors the Explore Minnesota logo, the Minnesota Tourism Growth Coalition. And it lists the organizations that have contributed resolutions to our cause. And that list continues to grow every day. I had two more organizations today that sent me their resolutions of support around this topic. So we want to, again, remind you that Minnesota ranks 30th because Representative Ward told me as a teacher I have to repeat it 7 times before it sticks in. So I think that's the 3rd or 4th time now. And that the return on investment is unprecedented. No other agency can return $8 in sales tax revenue for every dollar spent to market the state of Minnesota, $8 for every $1 generated. And that was reinforced with a private study that was completed to evaluate the effectiveness of Explore Minnesota Tourism. Again, the Explore Minnesota Tourism Council is the accountability for the EMT spending. We help to coordinate the focus, the initiatives, and yet they have an amazing team with EMT that actually executes the marketing. When we look back at tourism has such potential in the state of Minnesota. We are frankly unknown throughout much of the United States. Internationally, we have some amazing international destinations, and my partner is going to talk about that, but we have so much more that we can promote and talk about. How many of us have hosted friends and relatives at our homes that are visiting Minnesota for the first time, and they say, wow, I didn't know what Minnesota had to offer. I didn't know the amazing breadth of amenities and things to do within Minnesota, and that's because we don't tell anyone. We don't have the resources to tell anyone. So we appreciate your support. We appreciate Representative Ward's support for this bill and Chair Atkins for your support as we go into the next bill. And we appreciate you listening to our message. I'd like to welcome Doug Killian with the Mall of America to talk about your perspective.
Thanks, Lisa. Welcome. And thank you for all of you taking time to hear this today. And as Lisa and Representative Ward have said so well, you know, tourism, $11.9 billion industry in the state. And I've been head of tourism marketing at Mall of America about 11 years. And prior to that, I worked 19 years in public relations for Northwest Airlines. My last 10 as director of international communications. And I had the pleasure of working with Explore Minnesota Tourism and John Edmond and his team. And I'll tell you, they are a fabulous group of people. I mean, they represent the state extremely well throughout the United States at travel shows as well as international. They are highly skilled, highly experienced. So it's a pleasure to work with them. But given that, as has already been stated, you know, we are losing ground to other states. I'm sure just in the Twin Cities alone, you've noticed in the last couple of years, we are being bombarded by tourism advertising from Montana, Wyoming, South Dakota, Wisconsin. And they're very smart. They know that our own residents are great travelers. They love to spend their tourism dollars, but they're being wooed to these other states, and that's just Minnesota alone. As an example of how we're losing ground, the Wisconsin Dells has a tourism budget larger than Explore Minnesota Tourism. So it kind of puts it in perspective. And we do, of course, research Mall of America. We do a lot of research with our other Explore Minnesota Tourism. And our research shows that for every dollar that is spent by a tourist at Mall of America, and a tourist we define as someone who comes from outside the 150-mile radius, for every dollar spent at the mall, he or she spends, on average, at least $3 more in the local hospitality industry in the state. Wonderful resorts in Brainerd and elsewhere, car rental, hotels, dining, professional sports, theaters, museums, and much more. So it's a huge multiplier for the state and the economy and all the great things that are those tax revenues support. You know, Representative Ward mentioned some of the opportunities that we'd love to engage in with Explore Minnesota Tourism. Chicago is a huge market. Of course, you'd say, well, there's a lot of great things in Chicago. But, you know, as we know, a lot of people in Chicago love to have cabins in northern Minnesota. They love to stop in the Twin Cities and shop and enjoy professional sports and do other things in the Brainerd area and all the other great areas of the state. So, but we can't do much in Chicago right now. We just don't have the dollars with EMT. Kansas City, Milwaukee, Des Moines, many other, there's 25 million people who live within an 8-hour drive of the Twin Cities alone, and that's a huge market that's just there for the taking, but we need marketing dollars. Another interesting thing is, you know, the United States used to have a National Tourist Board, United States Travel and Tourism Administration, and Congress sunsetted it in the early 90s. And in the meantime, countries around the world have national tourist bureaus, the UK, Japan, China, etc. They spend millions of dollars trying to get Americans to go to their country as well as people from all over the world. Finally, 2 years ago, Congress passed the U.S. Travel Promotion Act, which creates a new private-public entity called Brand USA, solely based or solely focused on bringing international tourists to the United States. And it's specifically focused on frankly, middle-tier states like Minnesota, because, you know, New York, California, Vegas, they've got, you know, visit Las Vegas, visit Florida, they've got big markets, and frankly, they spend a lot of money overseas trying to get these international tourists. So Brand USA is really interested in promoting Minnesota on an international basis, but it's all contingent on matching dollars. And if we don't have the matching dollars by Explore Minnesota Tourism, we cannot take advantage of that fabulous opportunity with Brand USA. And also, just on a national basis too, President Obama is a real champion of tourism in the, for the United States economy. A year ago, January, so 13 months ago, he, by executive order, mandated that the State Department streamline visa applications for Chinese residents, residents of India, and residents of Brazil, because these markets are exploding. They want to come to the United States, but the visa process is very cumbersome. And in, within 5 months, the visa processing has been streamlined tremendously. So many more people from these countries are coming here. And the Chinese already, even though they need a visa to come to this country, they already represent the highest international spend in the United States, over $6,000 per visit to the U.S. And a lot of times it's much, much more. And so there was, and then also President Obama mandated or asked that the Commerce Department create a national tourism and travel strategy, which Commerce did. So again, you know, there's so much focus nationally on increasing tourism. So again, thank you for your consideration. It's a vital industry. It's a great producer of jobs, of revenue to support all the wonderful things in the state. But frankly, we're falling behind. You know, we're 30th now, and frankly we're still dropping. So we need support. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, just in conclusion, from our standpoint, you know, the current appropriation is about $8 million, and so this will be somewhere in between $7 and $8 million additional appropriation each year. And so what does that mean? What would that mean, members, to the state of Minnesota for an additional $7 million appropriation to marketing for tourism? It will generate about $24 million in new state and local taxes, more than $100 million in wages, an additional 3,600 new jobs in the state of Minnesota, and the source of that is DEED. So, again, we want to increase jobs and sales tax revenue for the state of Minnesota. With that, Mr. Chair, we'll stand for questions.
And thank you, Representative Ward. I've actually got two more testifiers on the list, I think, relative to both bills, so I want to hear from them. Then we do have some members with questions. So next up, we've got Joel Carlson and then also Mark Novotny. If you guys could come down, and as they're coming down, this is, I think, on behalf of all of the chairs, past chairs and present, this is one of our favorite days in the Commerce Committee. When we have the resorters come down, it's so nice to have you guys here. And tourism generally is a big deal. We do, you kind of had us at hello, Representative Ward, but I do want to give you an opportunity to talk about what's going on. I also want to welcome Representative Tice and Representative Falk to the Commerce Committee. Our newest members, and we appreciate and congratulate in particular Representative Tice in a recent election, but thank you for joining us. And so much for the props. We're already having a prop malfunction. But gentlemen, welcome to the Commerce Committee. Mr. Carlson, yes, Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair, would this be a good time for a gratuitous 2016 Ryder Cup comment?
Absolutely, Representative Hoppe.
Well, then I hope we hear one.
Any golfers up there?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just got invited to my first 2016 Ryder Cup meeting on behalf of the number of destination resort golf locations in Minnesota, and we plan to be actively involved in that. Representative Hoppe, it's going to be an amazing event. Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Joel Carlson, and I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I have long represented the Congress of Minnesota Resorts, and that is an association of family-owned resort operations in Minnesota. And we come to the legislature each year, sometimes with something to recognize us with, whether it's a minnow bucket or a marshmallow over a flame. But we don't come to the legislature to ask you to make the sun shine or the snow fall or the fish bite. We come here with real issues that impact our industry and tourism in Minnesota. You know, in the late 60s, Minnesota had about 3,500 small family-owned resorts. We are down to about 900. And once you lose a resort, which is in many instances, is the only access that average Minnesotans can have to our great natural resources. Once you lose a resort to private development, it never comes back. And so we've asked this committee and the legislature to look at things that can address, the problems that resorts have. And this is the second time I've been at this podium today on a resort issue, because my first hearing today was on a bill to repeal the post-Labor Day school start time. A critical issue for a resort business. You know, most of the members of our organization are not year-round businesses. They've got about 12 weeks of a season, and when you start starting school on August 6th or 8th, you have completely eliminated the potential for a profit margin for many resort operations, because Representative Newton, the author of the bill, said, they get out in May. What's the difference? A day in June is the same as a day in August. Well, I didn't ask Representative Newton to jump in the lake, but he maybe should in June, because it is not the same. Those issues, Mr. Chairman, have a direct impact on our tourism business, and we appreciate your consideration. You know, we absolutely support the chairman's bill relative to promoting Explore Minnesota Tourism and their budget. We work cooperatively and in conjunction with EMT on a number of advertising promotions. They can do cooperatively for us what none of us could do individually, and it's a critical function, and we appreciate the support for that bill. But we have other issues, whether it's plumbing licenses or AIS or unfair competition from state operated parks, and we appreciate you looking at all of those issues, including the one in front of you today. Mark Novotny, who's the president of our association, is with us here, and he's a member of the Explore Minnesota Tourism Council. He's been actively trying to increase that budget. I want him to address that, and then we'll answer any questions that you might have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. And Mr. Novotny, welcome to the Commerce Committee. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for the time that you're giving to us. Also, I want to reiterate what Lisa and Doug.
And Mr. Novotny, would you do me a favor and lean a little bit further? Maybe it was
okay.
There, I just know everybody at home is going to want to hear what you have to say.
Well, just to introduce myself a little bit, I am a owner-operator. I own Hideaway Bay Resort near Hackensack. We have 16 cabins, and there's many resorts with me today, and we're from all over the state. Alexandria, Brainerd,
Detroit Lakes,
mm-hmm. Park Rapids. I mean, there's a lot of them.
Okay. Yeah, even further. Now you, yeah. Now you start it. See what happens, Novotny? You know,
exactly.
Now you're going to have to identify everybody's district around the world.
So, resorting in Minnesota is a huge tradition, and part of that is the tourism budget that we have for Explore Minnesota Tourism. So, anything that we can do collectively as a state is very helpful for the resort industry, not only the resort industry, but Mall of America, for all the tourism, the museums, the parks, all of the recreation that we have in Minnesota. It's very important that we support that funding for Explore Minnesota Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Novotny.
You know, and Mr. Chairman, I know you thought we might be here on the annuity bill coming up, but there was a time when resorts, and this is a critical point, the value of your land was worth more than the value of your business, and that is why we lost resorts. And a lot of people would say your property is your annuity. That's your retirement plan, and you sell it off for private development. Because of the actions you have taken at the legislature, we now have a stable base of resorting where you can actually pass your resort on to your kids. You can sell it on the market as a going concern, where you can actually make a living at resorting. And that's what we're trying to preserve. And that's what the EMT budget can help us preserve. And the changes that you guys make can be so critical to keeping that core resort business viable in Minnesota. We appreciate your time and your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Thank you, Mr. Novotny. We do have a question or two. Representative Swidzitsky, you're on the list, and then Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first question goes to Representative Ward.
You mentioned Michigan and how they have spent $25 million on the same type of scenario. They also kind of said they have more of a sustainable or sustainable funding level or a funding source, I guess you might have said. Just wanted to see kind of what they're doing there in Michigan. Different than what we're doing here, I guess.
Representative Ward.
Mr. Chair, Representative Swidzinski. How do you say that name?
Swidzinski.
Swidzinski.
The gentleman from Lyon.
I like that.
Maybe.
Representative, all I have is the information in front of me that I researched out to find out what they did in order to increase their annual tourism budget $25 million for the next year. And it says establish a sustainable source of tourism marketing for years in the future. I do not have the method that they're using.
Okay. Sounds good.
Unless somebody else maybe has that. Well, maybe John Edmond from EMT may have that.
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Edmond comes down, one of the things that we are limited in with the budget that we have is the ability to market Minnesota as a destination outside our boundaries. You see a lot of the trip on a tank of gas and the work EMT does. But when you turn on the TV, on Comcast, I'm sure, you see Michigan out there advertising. You see come to South Dakota. You even see North Dakota, which has a tourism promotion budget. They are able to market outside their borders as their state as a destination, and that's what we're limited in doing.
Yeah, my daughter was actually, there's a South Dakota theme song that they have. She was singing the words to come to South Dakota. And it just,
it's a pathetic song.
But speaking of... speaking on behalf now of the state of Michigan, we have Mr. Edmond here. From can you enlighten us on what Michigan is doing, Mr. Edmond?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, the state of Michigan's funding is primarily through the general fund.
Okay.
Their actual lodging, the occupancy in lodging was really at an all-time low, and the governor decided to put an increased investment that they've been able to sustain. Other states have different funding mechanisms, including statewide lodging tax and car rental tax and other types of funding mechanisms, but most of those that have been on the general fund have had a real hard time to increase their funding.
Thank you.
Representative Swidzinski.
Mr. Chair, and then it was also talked about how Wisconsin Dells has just as large of a budget as we do as a state. Non-governmental sources of this type of advertising? You know, I think Mall of America, I'm sure, does some and some others. Do we have an idea what's being spent of non-governmental sources roughly beyond our borders?
To the extent any of you gentlemen know otherwise, Mr. Edmond might be another source of information. Ms. Carlson, do you know, or otherwise Mr. Edmond is working his way down? So,
well, Mr. Chairman and members, I can tell you that on behalf of the small resort community, web-based advertising, trade shows are a more common form of soliciting guests to their establishments. They just don't have the ability to put together a sophisticated television or print ad campaign. We just don't have the resources to do it. So on the small resort industry, what Explore Minnesota Tourism does is critical for us. And if you watch their ads, you're not going to see very many that don't have a dock or somebody jumping in the lake or a sailboat. I mean, they really do promote our great outdoor resources in Minnesota, and that's critical for us because we just do not have the resources and the breadth of ability to do that they do jointly with us.
Mr. Edmond, can you flesh that out a little bit?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. Representative, the question was what types of other non-state funding sources are there to use in marketing. We don't have a specific dollar amount that I could point to in that regard. However, a lot of, as Mr. Carlson had pointed out, a lot of, whether they be resorts or destinations or cities, don't have the resources to do the kind of marketing that a state can do and cannot compete with the Colorados, the South Dakotas, the Wyomings, the Wisconsins, et cetera. So they do a lot of cooperative partnerships with us. They do have the resources, but they can't do it on their own, and they do partnerships with us to extend the reach.
And then we had Representative Anderson, Loon, and Seltz, and at that point we're going to lay the bill over for probable inclusion. Usually I say possible, but I'd say it's pretty probable that this bill is going to get laid over for likely inclusion in the deed omnibus bill. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I read that it was $5 million that we have in outside sources, so the Mall of America's and those types that do advertising. That was in the Explore Minnesota Tourism thing, but I'll have to review it again. My question, though, I have one comment and one request and one question. From Ms. Paxton, you had mentioned the study showing the return on investment. I was wondering if you could share that with the committee. I'd like to be able to look that over. I think that would be helpful for all of us. And then for Representative Ward, I had a question on exactly how is this $16.2 million going to be spent? How is it going to be allocated out, or is Mr. Edmond the better person for that?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ward.
Representative Anderson, I'm going to have Mr. Edmond answer that as well, but I do know this, that we have the committee that Ms. Paxton has referenced that is put together to seek this additional funding for tourism in our industry, in our state, has looked at what we could do if it comes to fruition. So I'm not privy to exactly what we're going to do, because I don't think anything has been set in concrete yet as to what we are going to do. But we talked about a number of potential possibilities. So I will have Mr. Edmond address those.
Mr. Edmond.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative. And just to your first point, you are correct. It was about $5 million in cash and in-kind resources that is generated from the private sector to support the marketing promotions that we do with Explore Minnesota. We have to document that through the Department of Administration. There's additional money beyond that, though. It's also vested in marketing, so I don't have the big figure, but in terms of what's invested with us, it's correct. But to answer your question regarding how that $16 million would be invested, at the direction of our Tourism Council, which is a 28-person group, our intention is to use any increased funding that we would receive and specifically put it into marketing. In other words, not to put that into administration, overhead, and the like. And when I talk about marketing, our rough approximation right now, based on some of the information we've been providing to the council, is to put 75% of it at least into domestic marketing and digital marketing, put additional money into international, additional money into promoting niche market groups and things like that. And we are actually having a meeting with our Tourism Council in March to really kind of give us some direction as to how those monies would be invested. But Mr. Chair and Representative, I just do want to make sure that I emphasize that the point, that those dollars will be used for marketing in Minnesota, for not for any administrative oversight.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Edmond. When you have a better idea of actually how the dollars are going to be allocated, I think that would just be helpful to know. I applaud your efforts to go to a more digital means, because that seems to be the way that people, you know, plan their vacations, is using the internet. And obviously that's a cheaper way too for marketing purposes, and be curious to know exactly what that's going to buy us. And I'm glad to know that, you know, I know you have 60 staff currently, correct, for the department, and that won't go to any additional staff, correct?
Mr. Edmond.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it is not our intention to use that to put into staff. It's to put the money into the marketplace, and then just to amplify one of the points you're making, a little over 65% of our budget does right now go into digital efforts, and we do have a document. I'll make sure that the committee chair and you get representative that shows our preliminary estimates of how those dollars would be used.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Loon, then Representative Anseltz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess to whoever wants to answer this, whether Representative Ward or others, and I apologize if I came in a couple minutes late if I missed this part. So I just had a question about our current tourism, and how much do we estimate is coming from people who live in Minnesota, maybe in the Twin Cities area, and take a vacation maybe up north or to a resort or something, versus where we're the breakdown is from out of state or maybe out of the country even?
Gentlemen, does one of you have the up-to-date stats in-state versus coming from out-of-state? I know we had that at we had an overview, 2 weeks ago?
Right.
And that was referenced there, but I'm not sure if either one of you have that at your fingertips?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, if the question was about the travelers versus the budget? The travel is about half, based on the people that come to our website as an example, about half of those are residents and half of those are non-residents. Our market primarily is focused on Minnesota and the surrounding states. A lot of the resorts and a lot of people in greater Minnesota focus on the Twin City metropolitan area for a lot of their travel. That's important to keep those dollars in here. But we also have to bring other dollars from other states in here to increase the economic benefit of tourism. So it's right now it's mostly Minnesota, the surrounding states, and parts of Canada for our domestic market.
Representative Liu?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And so for the marketing dollars that we're currently spending, are we finding that basically it's tracking? So we're investing in, again, marketing to within Minnesota and surrounding states, that's where we're getting people, and there's a correlation between how much we're spending on that marketing to that audience and what's coming to the state?
Mr. Adler?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, our marketing pretty much matches based on the research of where people are coming. But one of the things we found out when there was a couple of notes here about our return on investment studies, what we've shown is that we get a greater return on investment for people that are traveling from farther distances because they stay longer and they spend more money. So if we had additional dollars that's available to market Minnesota, we would want to use some of those dollars to expand out beyond the market of people that are normally already coming here.
Thank you. And just a quick question to the resort owners, if I could. I was looking at the chart here, the blue sheet, with the tourism and travel expenditures by season. I was surprised to actually see how much winter travel we have. And I'm just wondering from the resort owners and kind of getting to the school start date, which I know has been a ticklish issue here up in the legislature for a number of years. You know, fall and winter looks to be a pretty decent month for tourism. Is that something that the resort owners have worked on trying to promote more winter and fall vacations, whether it's from out-of-state travelers or others? And how is that working?
Mr. Carlson or Mr.
We both might take over.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're going to do it really fast because we got 2 minutes left on this bill.
We have a lot of resorts that are open in the wintertime, mainly for snowmobiling and ice fishing. That's the biggest draw that we have. Most of the people that come to do the ice fishing and the snowmobiling are in-state because we don't have any dollars to promote that out-of-state. So personally, in my own situation, I'm closed in the wintertime because I don't have any winterized cabins, and the ones I do have that are winterized, I have a hard time getting people in because I don't have the dollars to draw them in.
And thank you. Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, just to amplify that number, which we have looked at and feel great about, much of that number includes the ski industry in Minnesota. It is not a resort-based or lake-based activity, and the other part of tourism in Minnesota that is not insignificant that is reflected in there are the convention business that is also reflected in there.
Thank Representative
you.
Ansel.
In that number.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought it was rather insightful to hear Mr. Edmonds' answer to the question and the comparison between Minnesota and Michigan. Michigan does it the old-fashioned way. They raise income taxes and they pay for services that the citizenry feels are services that the state wants. And that's what we should do. And in northeastern Minnesota, I would remind you that easily one-third of the economy is tourism, hospitality, recreation, snow, spring, summer, outdoors related. It's huge. And to be forced to market that great area with a patchwork quilt of gimmicks is rather upsetting to this member. And so as we go forward, I think we should give some serious consideration to doing this the old-fashioned way, and that's by raising revenue and providing the marketing that this industry deserves.
Thank you, Representative Ann Siltz. And somehow, Representative Hoppe, even though I said you were going to be the last one on the list, you snuck on somehow. I think this guy here may like you a little, but
Mr. Chair, get the
final word.
I see we're out of time. I'll pass.
Bless you. Great final word. Representative Ward, thank you, and to your testifiers, we appreciate your input this afternoon. We'll lay the bill over for probable inclusion in the deed omnibus bill that will be here probably in the next couple weeks. Thank you, Representative Ward.
Members.
And I will turn the gavel over to Representative Fritz.
Good job, John. Good job.
Madam Chair, I'll move House File 712. Be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Taxes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Atkins moves his House File 712 to be to taxes. Everyone in favor of that? Please say aye.
Aye. Well, now that's my kind of chair.
Okay.
We're with you, Madam Chair.
Meeting adjourned. Okay. All right. I'm sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself. I've had Joe teaching me how to move fast here. So, well, would you like to?
And in fairness, Madam Chair, I appreciate that. We do have Representative Hortman's bill up next, and I won't have all of the nice folks come back and testify. I'm taking Representative Ward's bill and kind of putting it on steroids. Because what's been frustrating to me over some time is every time, year after year after year, that these nice folks come down, we get Mr. Edmund and his folks come here, and they talk about how this is such a great investment, and I think everybody around the committee believes it, but we never give them a steady stream of revenue that they can bank on. So all my bill does is just say, and quite honestly, it's more of an issue. I get that for the tax committee, and that's why I've asked it be sent off to the tax committee. It would dedicate this stream of revenue from, we've talked about using the rental car tax. I also think taxpayers are just infuriated when they see money gets put into a, what some would say is a black hole, and then you don't quite know how it's going to be spent. I think most taxpayers can get their head around if you're going to take a certain amount, and rental car tax is a great place to draw from for something that's going towards tourism, because in many cases you're talking people who are renting cars are here because they're tourists. So there's that nexus there that is connected. And to be able to use that and tell folks, this is how we're going to spend it. And we know the ROI, the return on what's invested, is going to be significant. And we can demonstrate that. We can prove it to you. Based on that, Madam Chair, I'd appreciate the support of this this committee, and then we'll go and see what Representative Davids and Chair Lincheski will tell me in the Tax Committee. They may not find it such a friendly idea, but I do think it merits at least some serious discussion about dedicating this sort of source of revenue so that the folks in the Tourism Department can bank on it and plan out for their marketing campaigns and their efforts, not just for 6 months or a year, but over the next several years. With that, I'd stand for any questions.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Atkins, I see that we don't have a fiscal note. I imagine at some point we'll get some data. I'm particularly interested in how much is this going to cost government, because we actually, as a state, use a lot of rental cars, and I know a lot of our cities use rental cars as well, and I would hope that that's part of the fiscal note, that we'll get a chance to see that, but I don't know if you've done any preliminary studies to see how much this is going to cost government overall.
Representative Atkins.
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, I was talking too fast, and I wish I would have slowed down, because that's a point I wanted to make, is that I actually think, and I want to see what that's going to yield, because I think that the bottom line for the state will be a positive one. We see the kind of money when we put dollars into tourism, we see that direct return on investment. Those are people that are spending dollars here that wouldn't otherwise get spent, especially if we can reach beyond Minnesota's borders and have folks come in here and spend those dollars. And the sales tax revenue that comes from that, the income tax revenue, hopefully the folks sitting behind you make a whole bunch of money and they pay higher income taxes. My hope would be that we would see actually a greater amount in the bottom line rather than a net cost to the state.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Atkins, do you plan on exempting government units from the sales tax on this at all? Or?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, Atkins? I think government ought to pay its own way, too.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Yes, Representative Sellers.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Atkins. Since I had a car issue, I had to get a rental car for my car. Do you know what the in-state car rental use is for someone who comes to your car crash and you have to have a rental car for a week, what that number is? And I don't know the answer. That's why I'm
Representative curious. Atkins. Madam Chair, just so we're clear, I do plan on exempting Representative Zellers and his yeah, right. and his family. But nobody else in government, just Representative Zellers. Representative Zellers, I've asked for that figure, and I hope to have it by the time we get to the tax committee. But what's driving this, pardon the pun, is that if we're going to rely on this source of revenues, then we ought to spend it on what we're telling people we're going to spend it on, not just put it in the general fund and then possibly use it for something else.
Thank you. Well, and then, Madam
Representative
Chair,
Zellers.
And I'll probably save this for tax committee, but since we're here, the fact that it was the temporary tax for the Super Bowl is a little disturbing to me, Representative Atkins, but at least you're dedicating sources. My concern would be also for some of our outstate visitors that are coming in that get to the point where rental cars aren't used as much, and maybe the taxi cab industry is in favor of your bill because we outprice ourselves from a rental car standpoint, and everybody decides to take a cab instead of drive a car.
Representative Atkins.
And Madam Chair, Representative Zellers, this is already being proposed in the governor's budget. I'm just saying let's be true to it and actually use the dollars that are being raised for the purpose that has been indicated.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Okay. Members, any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Atkins, would you like to renew your motion?
I would renew my motion that House File 712 be recommended pass and refer to the Committee on Taxes.
And all in favor of that, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay?
No.
The ayes have it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
On the taxes. Thank you, Representative.
Next up is House File 791, Representative Hortman's bill. This Representative Hortman is a member of our committee. She moves that House File 791 be recommended pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Hortman,
thank you,
I don't need
Mr.
to
Chair.
Welcome you to the committee. Just please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I know this is going to sound boring. I'm going to try to make it sound as interesting as possible so that you'll pay attention because it is important. But this House File 791 deals with setting standards for selling annuities in Minnesota. We passed a bill off of the House floor yesterday to deal with a problem that was caused by Dodd-Frank. It was an inadvertent problem. It changed wire transfers. This bill is necessitated by a different provision of Dodd-Frank, but it wasn't an inadvertent mistake. It was something that was very purposefully done in the Dodd-Frank legislation. Annuities have generally been regulated as an insurance product in states, and there's state insurance law that governs how they're to be sold, and the state insurance commissioner, which in our case is our commerce commissioner, is the enforcement authority. There's also obviously the courts and the attorney general to enforce the consumer protection laws we have under state law. In 2008, the SEC decided that they wanted to get involved in the regulation of annuities. And proponents all over the country who wanted to continue to keep the governing of annuities under state law and under the province of the state insurance commissioners worked to get a piece passed in Dodd-Frank, and it's referred to as the Harkin Amendment. And what the Harkin Amendment does is it says that a insurance products that are sold in a state by an insurer that's domiciled in a state or wherever the insurer wants to sell the products is not going to be regulated by the SEC, but will instead continue to be regulated by the state if a state adopts an annuity suitability bill that's at least as good as a model that's out there. There's a group called the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, NAIC. And they are all the insurance commissioners of the 50 states. They are the people who regulate the insurance industry, and they authorize insurance companies to do business in a state. They are a regulatory group of folks. They put together a model of what the suitability standards for selling annuities should be. The Harkin Amendment says if Minnesota and any other state passes an annuity suitability bill that's at least as good as the NAIC model, then our insurers don't have to worry about the SEC regulating their annuity products. Then that would continue to be a state law province, and then our insurance commissioner would have the enforcement authority, as well as consumers and the attorney general to enforce consumer protections. So the bill that we've put together is an attempt to comply with the NAIC model annuity suitability bill. Now, one thing I will tell you about the NAIC model that I've been spending time with is it's not that well written. It's not super clear. And so we're struggling to get the language to be as absolutely as clear as possible, because what we'd like to make clear is that important consumer protections that currently exist in Minnesota state law will continue going forward. So I have a testifier, Robin Rowan, to provide additional detail about the provisions of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Portman. Ms. Rowan, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Robin Rowan. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Insurance and Financial Services Council, or MFSI. MFSI members write life insurance, annuities, long-term care insurance, disability insurance, and we also manage mutual funds and 401k plans. And we provide about 65,000 jobs in the state. I often get asked, in fact, not just 5 minutes ago, why we're working so hard, and it's been about 3 years now that we've been working on this bill, to enact the stringent regulatory systems that would cost our industry millions to implement and will likely stir discontent among our agency force. And the answer is, actually, we don't really like that bill, this bill, that much. And we like it less all the time as we go through round after round of changes with the Commerce Department, the AG, and the Governor's Office. But we need it. And we need it for the reason that Representative Portman stated, that we need to preserve the state regulation of these products, and we need to do that according to the Dodd-Frank Amendment by June of this year. But we also need it because as insurers, we need regulatory certainty. Right now, suitability means whatever the current Attorney General or Commerce Commissioner think it means. And that might be great right now, but it changes with administrations. And it's hard to operate in that environment. To borrow an apt analogy that the chair used on the floor last year when we were hearing this bill, the playground is a happier and safer place if the kids on the playground know all the rules before they start to play. More importantly, we feel that consumers deserve clear, upfront standards that insurers and agents can be held accountable to so they don't have to rely on enforcement action after the fact. Now, as Representative Portman stated, this bill began as an NAIC model. And to reiterate what she said, the NAIC is the drafters of the bill were insurance regulators, not the industry. And now, after 2 years of work, it is the strongest version of this model in the country. And 26 other states have adopted it thus far. Specifically, what the bill does is it requires an insurer to review every annuity recommendation by an agent. Current law allows us to rely on the agent's suitability determination. So this is a big improvement. The bill also tells agents and insurers what specific factors about a consumer's financial situation must be considered before recommending an annuity. And it's a far more comprehensive list than what exists in current law. It also requires agents to inform the consumer about how the annuity works and disclose certain features such as surrender charges, which is not required under current law. It also requires enhanced product training and special training on senior issues for insurance agents, which is not required by current law. Last year, the bill passed with overwhelming bipartisan support. It had 59 votes on the Senate floor and 110 in the House, but it was vetoed by Governor Dayton. To address his concerns, we've amended the bill in two ways. First, regardless of whether an annuity is sold by an insurance agent or a broker-dealer, there is a meaningful and independent review of that recommendation, taking into consideration the age, income, and liquidity of the consumer. That's an additional review to provide protection for seniors. Second, the bill makes explicitly clear that the insurer is responsible for the suitability of every sale, regardless of who is selling it. And in addition to that fact, the bill makes clear that the Commerce Commissioner and the Attorney General retain authority over every sale, regardless of who makes it. I'd be happy to answer any questions. And as always, you know, we are willing to work whatever, as we have in the past 2 years, continue to work with any interested parties that want to work with us and try to make the bill as strong as possible. And I honestly hope, Mr. Chair, that this is the last time I'm here talking to you about this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Ronan. Hopefully, Mr. the last Chair. Time you quote my lines from the floor, I at least make them sound more like Abraham Lincoln or something. Right? We did have Representative Horton. Do you have any other testifiers in favor of the bill?
I do not believe that I do, but I do have an amendment.
Right,
and that's have one. Yeah.
We've got unless it's an author's amendment, Representative
yes,
Hortman.
Yes, it is.
So Representative Hortman moves the A1 amendment. And as is tradition in this committee, we just put on what the author wants, and then we consider it in the form that the author would. I say that for Representative Tice and Representative Falk, I think, who've been here before. But all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries. Thank you, Representative Hortman. I believe that there's a question for Ms. Roan. Representative Hillstrom, did you have a question at this point, or do you want to?
Mr. Chair, actually, if I could get the next round of testifiers, and then if she's going to come
you
back,
bet.
I'll ask the question after I hear that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I do Horton. Have an oral amendment, and I would like to tell you I'm in the uncomfortable position of not having the Attorney General really like my bill much at this point. And as Ms. Roan said, it was did get to the governor's desk, and it was vetoed, and the Attorney General's office has concerns, and they'll testify about those concerns. And we have begun working together, and we have more work to do. But, you know, to show good faith and that we're moving towards their position and we want to continue to work together, I would offer an oral amendment at line 6.9 to add the phrase, "and the elevated review shall be conducted by a natural person or persons."
And Representative Hortman, specifically, so that's on line 6.9.
After the semicolon.
After the semicolon, and repeat that whack once more so that our assistant can get that.
"And the elevated review shall be conducted by a natural person or persons."
Just pause there for a moment. Do we have that? We have that. That is also an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries. You want to speak to that piece of it, Representative Hortman?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, and what I'm asking the committee to do today is to pass the bill and move it to the General Register, and we're going to continue to work with the Attorney General's office. I'll tell you, for members who've been here, you know this, the closer that a bill gets to the House floor, the more intensive and creative and energetic the negotiations become to resolve outstanding issues. So I think it's in the best interest of reaching a compromise to continue to move the bill forward. But I do very much respect the Office of the Attorney General and their job as a consumer watchdog, and have adopted this language to show my good faith in beginning the work with them and my commitment to continuing to work with them. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hortman. And it's yes,
sorry,
Representative Hillstrom.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Representative Hortman, isn't our new House rules that we're supposed to be fixing bills in committee, and aren't we supposed to not be having large author's amendments on the House floor? How do you reconcile that with your statement?
And actually, I might help reconcile that, because if the if there are going to be significant amendments, I've already told folks that I would prefer that the bill come back to this committee once again. Before it does go off to the House floor, and I think Representative Hortman is aware of that, and members are appreciative of that approach. With that, we've got, I believe, a representative from the Attorney General's office who would like to testify as well.
Did Mr. you want Gilbert? My additional witness first?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, please.
Sorry. I don't know that it's very long.
It was my understanding Mr. Sposetto was here to answer questions, but if he wants to testify, we're happy to hear from him.
Oh, I didn't know one way or the other.
Thank you, Mr. Spizzetto. Chairman. Dominic Sposetto. I'm representing the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, as well as the Minnesota Independent Insurance Agents, which represent about 6,000 insurance agents, or as we call them, insurance producers throughout the state. And we're here to speak in support of the legislation. The author has indicated the need for this legislation because of the Dodd-Frank Act and the Harkin Amendment, and the importance of this to display to Congress and those at the federal level that we can maintain state regulation of insurance in our state. And it's something that the Agents Associations have supported for many years and continue to support. And we think that the regulation of insurance products and insurance marketing and insurance producers should be at the local level and not at the federal level through a state government agency. Very simply, I'll make it very brief, there are several reasons that we think you should support this legislation. First of all, it clearly puts Minnesota in the camp of state regulation over federal regulation, and we join the other states that have already passed this legislation to prove that. It meets the requirements of the proposed Dodd-Frank Act by authorizing that we have satisfied the applicable suitability requirements that are required by the NAIC, and Dodd-Frank specifically mentions the NAIC regulations. It better provides annuity information and education materials to consumers. It enacts uniform and understandable disclosure documents for consumers as well, and I might say it applies both to insurance producers and broker-dealers, which I think is a good step in the right direction, and requires uniform education and training for agents who sell annuity products. And I know Representative Davids would be the first to tell you that he's not a fan of mandatory insurance education required for your license, but in this case the industry and the agent community has agreed to do this because of the seriousness of this issue and the enormity of this new regulation. And lastly, I think it's important to provide agents with a standardized and appropriate regulation so that they know what the law is. Right now, annuities were sort of a sidecar regulated under the life insurance statutes. And this particular statute then would put annuities in a class all by itself and give us the direction and guidance that we need to inform consumers about annuities and give the regulators the authority they need to assure adequate regulation of this product. So I encourage you to agree with this language. I don't really know the concerns of the Attorney General versus the concerns of the industry. I'm just here to say this is simple. Let's pass this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Spizzetto. And with that, we will hear from the and find out what the concerns of the Attorney General are. Mr. Gilbert, welcome back to the Commerce Committee.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Gilbert, feel free to proceed whenever you're ready.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, thank you. Well, thank you very much. My name is Alan Gilbert. I'm the State Solicitor General. I'm a member of the Minnesota Attorney General's Office. And I thank you for the opportunity to talk about this very, very important issue. The Attorney General's Office has been involved with litigation and public policy issues relating to annuity sales for some time, and I'd like to give you a brief overview of what the Attorney General's Office has done, what our senior citizens have done, and many of them are here who have participated in our litigation, what they have done to come forward, and they've done a great service to the state of Minnesota in light of how they were treated by these insurance companies. But first of all, I want to make it really clear that the existing suitability law that we have that is now subject to the change that the industry is seeking has been around for decades. It's been in place for at least 25, 30 years. And it requires insurance agents and insurance companies to sell an insurance product to a consumer only, and I stress only, if the product is suitable for that particular consumer. Seems like something that is pretty simple, something that should be in place in law. I don't think anybody can disagree with it. It's a basic concept of fairness that recognizes the special duty that I would submit that insurance agents and insurance companies have to their clients. And that's recognized throughout Minnesota law in terms of fiduciary obligations and things of that kind that I'm sure you're all familiar with. The bill that you are now considering today drastically changes that basic suitability requirement only, and again I stress only, as it relates to the sale of annuity. And I would submit to you that probably the product of an annuity, an insurance product of an annuity, is probably the principal reason that we should have a suitability law. When you think about it, annuities are often involved the payment by consumers of tens of thousands of dollars or more, sometimes a lot more. And they typically involve senior citizens. the annuity purchase involves not only a significant amount of money, but that money oftentimes is the sole source of income and the ability of senior citizens to live in retirement, to pay for the inevitable medical expenses, which we saw all too often in our litigation. And again, I think it's important to stress what's ironic here is that there is a particular insurance product for which there should be the strongest suitability law possible. It's the suitability law as it relates to annuities, considering the impact that they can have on our seniors. And of course, with the demographics changing every day the way they are, nationwide, 10,000 baby boomers retiring, it's all the more important and urgent that we give heed to the fact that our suitability laws, as it relates to senior citizens, should be the strongest they can possibly be. A few years ago, the Attorney General's office started receiving numerous complaints from senior citizens about annuities that they had purchased from the biggest annuity issuers, not only in the country, but in the world. Some of them are located in Minnesota. Many of them are located in Iowa. In the end, the Attorney General's office sued 6 different annuity companies, the biggest around, and ended up with some consent decrees from all of them, which we're very proud of, because those consent decrees required a procedure and a protocol to ensure that the sale of annuities to our senior citizens in particular were suitable for that particular senior citizen. It also resulted in the payment of hundreds of millions of dollars to our senior citizens so that they could live in retirement in the way they anticipated before they bought these annuities. And I'm not here to tell you that an annuity is necessarily a bad product, but it has to be suitable to the particular consumer purchasing the annuity. And that's what our law provides for, very specifically, and it's been something that the Attorney General's office has relied on for years in terms of enforcing the obligations of insurance companies when they sell products. And sometimes those products are car insurance or whatever, involve hundreds of dollars. These involve tens of thousands of dollars, sometimes the entire life savings of a senior citizen. You know, again, as a result, there's no question, at least in the Attorney General's office thought process, that we have to have the strongest suitability law possible as it relates to annuities, and especially with respect to the sale to senior citizens. Without the existing suitability law, and I was very involved in this litigation and all of the settlements that we were able to enter into, without the existing strength of that suitability law, we would not have been able to get the kind of settlement we did. I don't know that we could have got any settlement, frankly. We wouldn't have got the settlement in terms of the new procedures and the new protocol in terms of ensuring that these sales are suitable to senior citizens. But we also wouldn't have got the kind of restitution that we got for our senior citizens. And it was, again, it's only because of the existing suitability law. So where are we right now? We couldn't have done what we did without the existing law. So the insurance industry comes in and says, we want to change the suitability law, but only as it relates to annuities. Why would anybody come in and say, let's just change the suitability law as to annuities? Now, they're talking about the Harkin Amendment and things of that kind. I do not agree with their interpretation of the law in terms of the significance of what the effect would be of not having legislation. But nonetheless, to the extent we are amending the law, and we're trying to work with the industry to allow some sort of amendment of the law, and obviously that's up to you ultimately. But at the same time, we are not going to give in on making sure as best we can as an office to make sure that our suitability law remains strong so that our seniors don't have to go through what they went through already. And I will tell you, and I'm going to give some compliment to the insurance industry. After we went through the litigation, we did. Pardon me?
Nothing, sir. I'm waiting for my question time.
Okay. When we went through the litigation that we did, and we settled with the industry the way we did, we saw very few complaints after that, and I believe the industry did step up and we are very pleased with the processes they put in place as part of our settlement decrees. It was a good process. Those settlement decrees had a five-year term on them, and if they haven't all expired, they're about to expire. So to the extent we had an understanding as to how our existing suitability law would work, now we have a new suitability law. And this suitability law guts the existing strength of the current suitability law. And it's inappropriate, at least in the opinion of the Attorney General's office, to gut that law as it relates to annuities and especially as it relates to senior citizens. So that's why we're here today. Now, I do have a markup that the Attorney General's office has prepared as to the existing bill. Has that been handed out? Okay. So you have that in front of you. I can go over all of the provisions of the proposed changes if you would like. But let me just say this as general observations. I mean, this is a bit technical, some of these provisions, but they have drastic effects on real people and in real life. And that's the concern. As a general proposition, there's too many exceptions and exemptions where the suitability law doesn't apply under this new bill, where it would have applied under the existing law. That relates to, for example, some reference to direct sales and things of that kind, where no formal recommendation is made by the insurance agent. Unfortunately, what we saw, there were a variety of different people who were selling as an insurance agent. And in those sales, we saw a lot of abuses. And this bill, as far as we are concerned, allows for further abuse. And that's why we have taken the position that we have through the years. We are committed to continuing to work with the author of the bill, as well as the industry, to try to resolve further differences that we have. But at this point in time, the Attorney General's office cannot support this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Gilbert. And I know that we've got a few questions. I'm not sure who they're precisely for, but Representative Hillstrom was first on the list.
Mr. Chair, mine is for Representative Portman, and my question was going to be, based on the concerns that you have heard, what do you anticipate you plan to do now that the bill's on the floor in terms of addressing these issues before the bill gets taken up on the floor?
Representative Portman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom, we have a meeting actually scheduled on Friday. We are going to sit down for 2 hours and go line by line on the bill. And I will tell you the progress that we've made in the last 5 days to a week is because the bill is moving. And so the biggest problem that we still have to deal with is an issue related to what happens when broker dealers sell annuities as opposed to when insurance agents sell annuities, and we'll be working on trying to reconcile the point of view of the Attorney General's office and the point of view of the proponents of the bill.
Okay. Representative Sellers, and then Davids were on the list. Representative Sellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and for Representative Portman. I think you have a fine piece of legislation and would move forward with it. But my question, you answered two of the questions already, the number of votes we passed with last year and the governor's questions or problems with the bill. From an industry standard, as you've hybrided the bill to fit Minnesota, however, applying it to a national model, where does your bill stand as far as protection, as far as industry standards state across the country?
Representative Sellers, Mr. Chair, I believe the bill has very strong standards to protect consumers in terms of outlining what the specific things are that either an insurance agent or a broker dealer has to ask and know, or an insurance agent or a broker dealer has to ask and know before they can advise that annuity is suitable to somebody. And you know, whether it's your grandmother or my grandmother, I am interested in making sure that we have a standard in place that's absolutely crystal clear, that's protective of consumers. I think that the language is protective of the consumers, but I do very much respect the Attorney General's role in protecting consumers in the state of Minnesota, and I know that they have some wisdom to share with us as we move forward, and I'm open to making changes to improve the bill.
Representative Zellers.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And one last question, Representative Hortman. Do you see other states where authors such as yourself and the industry are working to amend their standards or to improve their standards at the level of Minnesota?
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zellers, all I know about the other states is that 29 other states have adopted legislation substantially similar to the NAIC model. I don't know about the particular negotiations that went on in any of those states.
Representative Zellers.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hortman, I would strongly encourage you. This was a fine piece of legislation, even though the last author did a good job presenting and passing the bill. And I mean that sincerely, Mr. Chair. You actually did a fine job, and I think the legislation should have been signed in the first place. But the fact that you have made some changes, I appreciate, and I think you continue on your current path. And not a path that leads for more lawsuits of Minnesota companies. Thank you for your fine piece of work.
Representative Davis.
Protection for seniors.
Representative Davis.
Mr. Chairman, if I ask for Mr. Gilbert's opinion,
I apologize.
Oh, no. I will ask him.
Remember the playground quote I had on the House floor, guys.
Exactly, I mean, and I did not ask for Mr. Gilbert's opinion or comments.
Although I kind of like it. It's, you know, when we get a little feisty in here, it sort of adds a little spice to the, you know, my mom, when she watches on TV, she likes it when we kind of mix it up. So,
well, if you want spice, Mr. Chairman, I'll give you that, but I don't need comments.
We
know he doesn't
like
annuities or the insurance industry.
Representative Davis,
well, thank
bring
you.
A little order back here, will you?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try and bring some order back to the process here. First of all, the comments that Mr. Gilbert made were extremely misleading. And the propaganda passed out by Mr. Gilbert is simply nonsensical if you look at it and understand the issue. Mr. Gilbert said that the industry was seeking these changes. It's not true. It was the regulators that were seeking these changes. A little history on NAIC models. I chaired this wonderful committee for 6 years, and it was certainly an honor. The NAIC generally comes out with recommendations. They are the regulators, not the industry. And the NAIC came out with recommendations for suitability. And normally what would happen in this committee, as you know, on other issues, when the NAIC comes out with something, you just adopt it. It's not controversial. You just do it and go home. What happened last year was a bill was put forward that gave stronger regulation and more protection to seniors than any bill in the history of this country. California passed it, and it was considered to be the most protection for seniors. What we did was we put the NAIC model on steroids for the most protection for seniors, and it was vetoed because the Attorney General's office would not support it. Mr. Gilbert said that annuities were the sole source of income for many seniors. That's simply not true. The sole source of income, as a rule, would be Social Security. Then you have other pensions, and you do have annuities as another source of income. This bill that Representative Hortman has, and I thank you too, Representative Hortman, this is a very strong piece of legislation. I hope you don't let the Attorney General's office mess it up, because this is the strongest piece of legislation that has ever been brought forward regarding protecting senior citizens in this country. And as far as having loopholes and FINRA issues and so forth, it gets, we probably don't want to get too deep in the weeds on this at this point, but Mr. Gilbert will say that FINRA exemptions, a loophole, and what that has to do with is it having to do with variables versus index versus fixed, and all those types of issues. But the statement that guts 25 years of suitability is just totally inaccurate. We need to get on board in Minnesota. We're about the only state that is sitting out here and holding this type of legislation hostage, and I think it's time to get moving. These are contracts that save seniors millions of dollars. I brought a couple statements from one of the companies, and for full disclosure, I'm in this industry. I know it backwards and forwards. I've been doing this for 30 years. For example, one of the statements from Mr. Gilbert is there could be problems with liquid assets. Well, as compared to what? When I look at a statement from going from 2008 to 2009, if a person had been in the S&P through a stockbroker, they would have lost 61.69% of their retirement assets. But because they had an indexed annuity, they lost nothing. In fact, on contracts that are issued today, they'll have a 6% guarantee on that contract in their income account till age 90 with some companies, for 10 years with other companies. So we need to get this passed. I even brought my own statement on one. Had I been in the S&P, I would have lost 51.5%. But because of the indexed annuity, the protection given to senior, I'm a senior? This is one of my many contracts. 51.5% I would have lost, but no, I was protected because I had an annuity. And on this one for the year, I received zero, but zero is my hero because I didn't lose anything, and I could start, my low point was my previous high point. And so do we need to go after the bad actors in this industry? Absolutely. We do. And nothing in the Hortman legislation, nothing, says that the Attorney General's office or the Department of Commerce is not able to go after the bad guys. Get the bad guys. Nail them. But everybody's not a bad guy.
And what we're going to do at this point, we've got Representative Hoppe, then I want to hear from Mr. Gilbert once more, and then final word is going to go to Representative Hortman, and we're going to vote in 3 minutes.
I was just getting going.
But you paused. You took a breath, and that gave me my opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I would just like you to encourage everybody to support this legislation. Representative Hortman is a very good legislator and a good author, and I like this stage of working on a bill when she says she's willing to work with Representative Hillstrom in the Attorney General's office. We have a chair that's committed to bring it back here if it's substantially changed. I thank you, Representative Hortman, for your way of going about this and way of working on this bill, and I look forward to supporting it. Thank you.
Mr. Gilbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really don't know what to say with respect to what Representative Davids has to say.
I'll bet you'll find something, Mr. Gilbert.
I agree with a thing he said, but I do want to just highlight for the committee that to the extent Representative Davids is referring to this model bill, less than half the states have adopted it, and by its own language, this model bill is intended to only provide minimum standards. And all I am asking, all the Attorney General's office is asking, please keep an open mind as to the senior citizens that we are trying to protect in this state. We're all going to get there. I'm not too far away, and I'm not going to point any fingers at anybody else as to how close they might be. But we're all going to get there. We're all going to need this protection in some form. But beyond that, it's just the right thing to do. These are big ticket items. It's a lot of money. The agents make a huge commission on this. There's incentives sometimes that are problematic as a result. I just ask that you keep an open mind. And please help us protect the seniors. We need the ammunition, so to speak, if and when we have to litigate these cases. And I guess I would agree with Representative Davids that not all the insurance companies are bad actors, and not all insurance agents are bad actors. But when we do find bad actors, we need to have the legal principles that allow us to litigate our cases appropriately.
And that is a nice handoff to Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I'm working hard to achieve the right balance at the end of the day to make sure that we have strong consumer protections in the bill. But we also have a situation where Minnesota insurers can compete in the national marketplace with appropriate constraints on their conduct, and that we don't disadvantage Minnesota insurers by not adopting the NAIC annuity suitability model on time.
And with that, Representative Hortman renews her motion that House File 791 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say so.
No.
The motion carries. Thank you, Representative Hortman. Thank you, Mr. Gilbert.
Thank you, Aubrey.
Thank you, members. We are off tomorrow, so we'll see you again next week. With that, we are adjourned.